A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Sports Joe presents the GAA Hour.
Hello and welcome back to the GAR. My name is Lee Costello and I'm delighted to be joined by my good friend, Niall McIntyre. We hope you've had a really good Christmas and a happy new year, but it's back to porridge, back to normality. And normality for us, Niall, is sitting here on a Monday talking about the GAA at the weekend. Is there anywhere you'd rather be?
Definitely not, Lee. It's great to be back. I haven't seen you in a good, I'd say, it could be nearly a month and a half. You were a bit sick there before the Christmas, weren't you? So
yeah, everyone caught a dose of something and then I caught a dose of the pints after that, you know, over Christmas. So
that can happen.
I enjoyed myself. Speaking of not seeing things though, the big game at the weekend was Glen v Kilmaco Crokes, and it was maybe the best game I've never seen.
Yeah, it was... I was getting such a headache watching the match, yeah. Like when you were delighted when the ball comes over to this side of the field because you can see what's happening. And when it's on the far side, you're literally guessing. Like I remember for Hugh Kenny's goal coming up, 5 minutes to go?
Yeah.
All you can hear is the TG Carr commentator, Brian Tears. He just lets out a roar and you know it's in the net. It was the same for the Shane Walsh goal 5 minutes later.
Yeah.
That was the only way you knew it was a goal, which was kind of exciting in a way, like, but you'd prefer to be able to see it. Like,
no, I definitely would have preferred to have seen it. Like, I mean, and it gets to the point, like, in a more serious point, like, should the game not have been played when you have a game of that importance and even commercial value? Because, like, there's so much narrative around the match, obviously, Glen, Kilmacrokes, the final last year, the 16 players, all of that. Everyone was so excited for this. We had to wait a year to get the replay, you know. Should they have tried to hold off and find a way to squeeze it in differently?
It probably shouldn't have been played, like, you know, like, because Robbie Brennan said it afterwards, he couldn't see what was going on at the far side of the field. Michael Warnock said himself and Shane Walsh, that was probably the most unbelievable quote of the day, that Shane Walsh said to him, do you have any idea where the ball is? Like, and the two boys were marking each other. And Michael Warnock said that. He said that you weren't sure what side the ball was coming from. Like, so that... That completely changes the game. But it was just one of those days, Lee. Like, I was watching some of the horse race in Naas, and the first race was on yesterday, and the commentator just stopped commentating because he couldn't see what was happening. Like, and
what do you say? What do you talk about?
There was betting and running in Paddy Power, and the favourite was in at 1-100 to win the race. Like, and like, you'd wonder where this was coming from, like, because you don't really know, like, nobody can see what's happening. And then the horse come up to the finish and that horse is in fourth place, like, a good bit behind, like. So that was called off after one race.
There
was obviously a few hurling matches called off. Cork and Limerick was called off. Galway and Offaly went ahead for about 50 minutes. I don't know how you could play a hurling match. I know it was different in different places all over the country, but whatever about football? How could you play hurling, like?
Just guessing. Like, I mean, I couldn't play it regardless. But all credit to the players, though, because it was, the standard was still unbelievable. And it was such an entertaining game for the parts that you could see. And even the parts you couldn't see, you just knew, you know, players were still doing all the right things. Especially Glen, they really came out swinging right from the start. They looked like men on a mission. Danny Tallon scored 3 points in just the first 9 minutes. His first point, where he dropped the shoulder, little dummy, and then kicked it over the bar. It was sort of shades of, do you remember his goal last year? You know, beat the first man. You know, he has that sort of in his locker. But what I think is really great about Danny is that it must have been 10 minutes later, Shane Horan had the ball and he was sort of bending his run and he was in the Glen box at this stage, and the man nearest him getting the near hand in was Danny Tallon, number 14 on his back, you know. And I know that's very common nowadays, the full forward, everyone tracks back and stuff, but it just got me thinking, and this is, I know this is a little bit of a say point, but to me, Danny is like the perfect Mickey Hart kind of player. He loves forwards who get back, who don't have a lot of like airs and graces about them, you know, get the job done, hits the freeze, takes the shots when they're on, and does all the hard work back. Like, I wouldn't be surprised at all if Mickey Hart was be on the phone to Danny in the coming weeks.
I actually thought that he'd be kind of more of a, you know, a skillful forward that would stay up, but he's obviously...
He has that in his locker. Mm. Like, I was talking to Enda Gormley, who a famous player from Glen, won the All-Ireland with Derry, and coached a lot of them boys at underage, and he said, not the problem with Danny, but he said, he's just too honest sometimes. Do you know, he sees a runner and he just has to go after him or whatever, but he does have that sort of relaxed, sort of Jimmy Clark kind of aura style about him, you know, where everything looks very easy for him, you know, so you maybe have a mixed perception of him. But I honestly think that, like, when you see, if you watch Danny in a match, then you see the whole game. You know, what he's doing sort of tells you what Glenn's doing, if that makes sense. And I just thought it was interesting because he obviously opted out of the Derry panel for whatever reasons. But with Mickey Hart in charge and just knowing the kind of style of football that Mickey Hart likes, I wouldn't be surprised if he gives him a call. But Glenn were flying, Danny was flying, and it could have been even better for them, although at the cost of Jack Doherty, when Brian Sheehy sort of... A high tackle? How would you describe it?
He cleaned him out of it. Like, it was... Yeah. it was probably more out of just... It was clumsiness more so than intent, but it was a definite red card, like, when you see it. And he was lucky to stay on the field after that. Jack Doherty kind of came down on his knee and then he had to go off and he was kind of limping off. So I'm not sure if it was a leg injury. I think it probably was the way he was limping off. So between him and Malik O'Rourke mentioned that Ryan Dugan got injured in the second half. Mm-hmm. So they'll be too, like, you know, it's only 2 weeks, like, if it's a hamstring or whatever it is, they'll be two lads that they'll be mad to get back because they're such key players for Glenn. But as you said, I suppose Glenn looked nervous in the first two or three minutes.
A couple of minutes,
And there were 2 points down, and then they just completely took over, like, to be 5 points up and well deserving of it. Kilmacud were completely out of the game, like, from what you could see.
No, they definitely were. And sort of last year, Glenn were obviously missing Kieran McFaul, who the year previous was definitely their best player. And you nearly didn't notice the difference because they did so well. They won Ulster, they reached the All-Ireland final, and, you know, they ran Kilmacroke's right to the end. But now that he's back, you can see what he brings and the difference in terms. Did you see the bit, I'm saying that loosely because no one could see anything, but Paul Mannion was on the sideline. Ryan Dugan, I think, Conor Glass were sort of tackling him, and they get him over the sideline, they win the ball and they win the free, and Kieran McFaul, he wasn't even involved in that, comes straight over, gives Mannion a good shoulder barge and a roar in the face, and he just sort of brings that kind of, like, intensity, that bit of nastiness, you know. He's like, he's almost like their enforcer.
Big time. When he scored his point as well, he was running
was
out and he let a roar at Roy O'Carroll, I think, was across from, you could see how fired up he was. Yeah. And I suppose a lot of that probably is to do with the fact that he missed last year. Like, you know, he missed the All-Ireland final, like, that his club were playing it. So I'd say he's like, he'd be very fired up for this year. And he's also such a brilliant player as well. Like,
he can
kick points from anywhere. And then he used to play centre or wing forward sometimes for Derry, like. But
he was corner forward for Derry this year.
Corner forward, yeah. But he's centre back. He's such an engine as well that he can completely dominate the game, like. What a player to, like, bring, like, to give you a boost.
Just to add to your squad.
Like, it's nearly like a signing, like, someone you talk about Shane Walsh coming to Kilmacud. Like, that's how big he is for them, like, and they definitely needed him, like.
No, there's no doubt about it. And then shortly after that, Conor Glass got a point, and it really felt like Glenn's leaders were standing up, you know, and they were going to take this game to Kilmacud. Back to that end of Gormley conversation I had with him, like I say, he coached a lot of them boys at underage, and he always made the point that they're brilliant at driving their own standards. you know, and they're really strict at it. And he said, if you were to go in and take a training session and they didn't think it was good enough, they wouldn't be long in telling you that we really need to push this on here now. And you could see that, you know, with the sort of leadership and the players. You know, it's not just one guy has to stand up, like, you know, Danny early on, and then Kieran McFall, and then Glass gets that point at the end. They just have that sort of, what's the word, like a collection of them.
Bradley as well.
He was unbelievable.
He stood up early on when they were struggling, and he kicked that brilliant score off the left. It was one of their first ones, and it was so similar to the one, the winner he kicked against Niamh Connell earlier in the year. He's just such a big game player. I think this kind of... There's a desire about Glenn this year, Lee, and I nearly felt there was kind of a inevitability that they were going to win.
Mm-hmm.
There was just something. There's unfinished business for them, and
yeah.
I suppose as well as kind of, you just felt that they were a team that are on a mission, and you can clearly see it in them. And you mentioned it to me earlier as well, like even after the game, they were calm, like, you know, this wasn't the big. The big target, like the big target is to win next weekend. And you could see that in their play, even though it obviously got a bit panicky there towards the end of the game.
Oh, it did, yeah. And we'll get to that, because at halftime, you know, things were looking rosy. Crokes made two substitutes. They took off Sheehy and Luke Ward, both hooked at halftime. And Kane O'Connor came on, and I thought he really helped make the difference. And that sort of coincided with, as you mentioned, Ryan Dugan's injury. He came off in the 39th minute. And them two things sort of started to see things sort of change. Eunan Mulholland, I don't know if you remember this, he was sort of through and he kicked it over the bar to put them seven clear. And like that does seem like the obvious thing to do. But Danny Tallon was in the corner screaming for it. And if you see the camera angle from behind the goal, Ethan Doherty was behind him pointing, you know, square to Danny, you know, go for the goal. But Eunan hit the point. He obviously got a little bit of a bollocking, and then he was doing the sort of calm down, you know, let's stay in this kind of thing. But straight away after that, Paul Mannion scores a wonder point, and Shane Walsh then hits a free, and it all started to feel a bit ominous. It started to feel like if you have an opportunity to get a goal against Crokes and try to put them out of there, you need to take it, even though you're already sort of building the lead. But Mannion and Walsh sort of took over from there on, and it just goes to show, no matter how badly you're playing, when you've got forwards of that ability, you're always in the game.
I'd say even when Kilmacud seen that, you know, like that,
yeah,
he didn't finish them off, they're like come on, like we need to wake up here. And you always felt that Kilmacud would bring something, like,
yeah,
like they haven't been beaten in club championship football since Kilcoo beat them in that All-Ireland final. Like this, okay, is the best team that we've seen in many years. And they had been so poor and so uncharacteristically passive in the game up to then that you knew something was coming, especially as you said as well with Mannion and Walsh there. And I suppose from that moment, they completely took over. And Keane O'Connor, he played a big part in it as well, just running straight at Glenn. And Kilmacud, they took over then. And you kind of felt... If they got to within a point, obviously, then Ethan Doherty got that lucky goal. Andy McGowan was dispossessed, and
yeah,
you obviously thought it was over then. But up to then, it looked like a draw game. Like,
yeah, it did, which is weird because Glenn were obviously the better team for so much of it.
Quickly,
so quickly.
And that turned, it
sort of started, well, we talked there about Walsh and Mannion, but Walsh's pass for the goal, that sort of cross. Who was it got the goal again? Because I had it the Darren Dempsey did,
yeah,
but there was a big confusion,
yeah,
but obviously with the fog. Like in a game where you couldn't see anything, Walsh still manages to pick out the most impossible pass, you know, or even just to see that it was on. Because when you're playing Gaelic football, you're always taught not to cross the ball because it always favours the defender. You know, it's not like soccer where someone can get ahead to it. Like everyone can use their hands. It's like crossing it into like a box full of goalkeepers. You know, it doesn't really make sense. And then quite often if you're playing with lads who play a lot of soccer and they're maybe just back from, you know, a soccer season and they fall into own habits, they find themselves on the wing and they're crossing in, you're always the first thing, you know, they're getting hooked and the manager's going to go mental at them. But like, that's just typical Walsh, isn't it? Like he's going to be unorthodox and pick out them things that no one else can do.
But it was perfect. It was right, yeah, into the breadbasket. It was nearly in the net before, within,
yeah,
seconds of Walsh kicking the ball, which summed up what a brilliant pass It was, but I suppose it is, it's a credit to Crokes as well that, you know, while things were going against them that day, they still went down like champions, you know, like, and you seen,
and with composure too,
with composure they didn't kind of just do you know, they really went for it in those last few minutes. You could see in Robbie Brennan after the game he was a bit frustrated that they hadn't brought that earlier in the game, do you know, that they were a bit maybe passive, and I suppose sometimes they are. You know, sometimes we've seen that they kind of control games and that's the style that they have. Mm-hmm. They obviously had to put all hands on deck in the last few minutes then. And I suppose I only realised this as well, kind of coming up to the final, that, you know, they were missing five lads from last year's, that started last year's final in Ben Shovlin, Killian O'Shea, Conor Casey, who came on, Michael Mullen, and Conor Ferris, the goalie, even though the goalie kicked a brilliant point yesterday.
The equaliser, or one of the equalizers.
Brilliant point. So you kind of forget that they replaced him with, you know, a few young lads who were very good as well. But I suppose it shows the strength and depth that they have. But
sort of made room for, like, that's Shane Horan sort of starting now. He wasn't really sort of coming on and off last year, wasn't he?
And Luke Ward and Dara Dempsey, who've contributed as well themselves this year. So I kind of felt, I got the sense off that Robbie Brennan interview, I'm not sure if you've seen it, that he was, it was as if he was kind of winding down. I got that sense off him. He kind of said, he said, Hopefully the lads will regroup and come back at it again. They've been on a great run for the last 6 years. So they're a good bunch and I think they'll be back again. You know, it kind of sounds a bit like he could be on his way out. He's obviously done a great stint, and to be fair to him as well, he was very sporting, I thought, after the game as well. Like, he admitted that while the conditions weren't playable, it wasn't an excuse.
Yeah. And he said that, like, I think the words he used was that, like, we almost stole it in the end. You know, he wasn't afraid to admit that, and that's because that's nearly how it would have felt. Because obviously after that Walsh cross and the goal, Higgins equaliser, the goalkeeper, I think Emmett Bradley then hits a really important free, puts them one up, and then that leads us to the Ethan Doherty goal. You mentioned that it's very fortunate, and it was. There's no doubt about it. But I thought the pressing from Glenn at that point, because this is what, like, the 73rd minute, something like that.
And they were up by a point, weren't they?
They were up by a single point.
Yeah.
They go short with a kick out, maybe to do with the fog and just, you know, the way the layout was. And Glenn's forwards, and it was hard to tell. I was trying to work out who it was, but they were sprinting.
Yeah, it was Danny Tallon, actually, because he was sprinting at your, like, man straight away.
Like,
yeah,
with everything, you know.
And then Glass got the foot in.
Yeah, exactly. And then that, you know, it was sort of like make your own luck. Like, that was kind of, you know, fortune favours the brave. And then I think it's more impressive too, although a little bit strange, Glenn only used two substitutes that entire match. The first one for Jack Doherty. As far as I know, I'm happy to be correct in that, but everywhere I checked, they only used the two. First one for Jack Doherty, who was injured early on, and then Ryan Dugan, who was injured as well. So, like, it's not like they had a lot of fresh faces out there. You know, everyone who was on that pitch had been running themselves into the ground, and to do that so late on. So, on the basis of that, now, straight after that, Shane Walsh gets what it probably was a fortunate free or a goal. I think the ball sort of gets lost in the sky. Everyone...
It was funny after that, Conlon Bradley, the goalie, he was looking at Emmett Bradley and they were just staring at each other for a good 10 seconds, about to give out. And Conlon Bradley thought Emmett had it.
Yeah.
It was clearly too high for him, just behind the fog.
Two brothers as well.
Yeah.
I'm sure they would be quick to blame each other.
It was like, I could see Warnock was kind of cramping up at that stage and he was down in his hunkers while Walsh kicked that ball in, and he was like, oh no, like...
I know.
Like, because they had it won. The TG Car commentator even said it. Like, he said it, this game is over now. Like,
I mean, that's why it was so impressive with Glenn, was the point that, like, Kilmaco Crokes, a team as good as them, had the momentum they did, and it's so hard to break that. But Glenn did. You know, when it wasn't going their way, they made it happen, sort of thing. And then to concede that goal, I'd say they were thinking, well, like, what do we have to do here,
like,
to put this team out of it?
Most referees would have played an extra.
I was very surprised that when Conlon kicked it out and they blew the whistle, I was very surprised.
Because it was like 63-30 when the goal went in and he took so long to kick it out.
Exactly,
Imagine, like, would there even have been extra time in those conditions? Like, there probably would have had to been, but it was crazy. It was crazy to watch it, like... You'd have such a headache trying to watch the television that you were like, sometimes you'd nearly zone out, that it was so hard to focus on it. And I was only thinking, like, imagine if you didn't understand Irish and you're just watching this blank screen, you haven't a clue what is going on. Like,
it's nearly impossible to follow.
Which is the shame, like that. Yeah. You know, it would have been. I actually couldn't believe on Saturday. I was thinking, why is this game not on tonight under the lights? Like
RTE and the Saturday night show.
Whatever, whether it's RTE or TG Car, like. They were, under the lights in Nouri, that would have been special. Like, and I'm not saying this just because the fog kind of ruined the game, but like, either way, it would have been, there would have been a better atmosphere, I think, there anyway, if it was on
it
Saturday.
It deserved it like it did. You mentioned Michael Warnock there, sort of cramping up. He got man of the match in the end. I thought it was maybe between him and Emmett Bradley in the end, but marking Shane Walsh for the whole game, it's hardly an easy task. You have to be switched on at all times. But he got a great point in the first half himself. And it's that whole, which I was glad to see, because when you hear, you know, oh, who's on Shane Walsh? And you're thinking, I don't think man-marking him and just sticking to him is the way to do it. I think you got to attack. It's like that whole Chrissy McCaig marking Dermot Connolly all them years ago for Slackneil and Vincent.
Lee Keegan marking Connolly as well.
Exactly, yeah. The best way to do it was to go forward and get scores yourself and make him chase you as best he can as well. But then you wonder as well, that's why Thomas Sullivan marked Shane Walsh in that All-Ireland final, because he was brilliant at going forward. But then he got roasted, you know, he conceded like 9 points.
Sometimes you just have to accept it, like, it's Shane Walsh. Like.
So, like, I mean, that's just all credit to Warnock, like, and what a brilliant player he is. The Glen boys all call him Spike. I don't know why, actually. So maybe we should have checked that in case it's something wrong with it.
He's real quick, though, as well. He's so quick to cover the ground, and he's a brilliant tackler. He's strong. Yeah. He's clever on the ball. He's as you said, they've so many leaders, but he strikes me as a big one as well.
Yeah, and he filled in at that number six spot when Ciarán McFaul was missing last year. Like I say, you know, he didn't really hugely notice the difference, which is massive testament, because we already talked about how brilliant Ciarán McFaul is. He's another one, like, and I don't mean to like push this, because this could just be a case that the Glen boys, these ones in particular, aren't interested in playing for Derry. A lot of the club boys, especially at successful clubs, aren't, because, you know, it's such a time commitment already and they've got so much in. But like, I only think of it because, you know, Mickey Hart's got the job and there's going to be a lot of pressure on him, so he needs to hit the ground running. And to do that, you want all of your best players. But like, if I was Derry manager, you know, you'd be on the phone to two or three of them lads.
Isn't it a funny one, the Glenn thing, that, like, do you know, some of them boys don't play for Derry. Maybe they don't want to play for Derry because they're doing so much. Like, Malachy O'Rourke was linked with the Derry job as well. Yeah. And I heard Conor Glass interviewed yesterday, and he was like, when Malachy told me that, no, my focus is on Glenn now at the minute, that I knew that there was something special coming. Like, the Glenn boys wouldn't have wanted Malachy O'Rourke to be the Derry manager.
Because
they would have lost him then. Like, so it's funny that sometimes a club doing well mightn't actually help the county team. Like, you think of Ballygunner in Waterford, and they've been so good, but they don't have too many on the county team. Like,
no, absolutely. So, and then, like, when Armagh were going through that really poor stage, they got right to Division 3. Cross McLean were so dominant, and, you know, it didn't help.
Yeah, because, like, lads can just, like, they're like, we're focused on the club now.
Yeah.
And especially when you're at that elite level at the top of the club game. Like, apart from the Ballyhale lads, there's obviously lots more as well, the likes of Paul Mannion. It's so tough to balance that, like, to get the two of them, to reach the peak of the two of them. Like,
no, it is. Absolutely, it is. But, yeah, what a brilliant game. And there actually was another match on as well. St Bridget's are going to be the finalists. They're going to play Glen in Croke Park. They beat Castlehaven 111 to 10 points. This is St Bridget's third All-Ireland final since 2011. Like, I mean, you think Glen technically, you know, not technically, they haven't won an All-Ireland final, but they're going to go into it as overwhelming favourites. But really, you know, St Bridget's are the one with the tradition and the history.
And you could see that yesterday, even, you know, that they have that tradition. They lost their first final to Cross McGlen in 2011, then they beat Ballymun, obviously, in sensational circumstances back in 2013. Frankie Dolan got the late score to win it that day, an unbelievable score. They were impressive against Cara Finn to beat them, but they were even more impressive yesterday. I thought they were, while they had that very flat spell after half time, they actually didn't score for 17 minutes after half time. you always feel though that that can happen when a team is winning. Do you know that they, same with Glenn, that they can kind of sit on it a small bit. But
well, Castle even had no choice then but to throw the kitchen
exactly
sink,
so exactly there. So yeah. Kind of but I thought Bridges then when it really came down to it, like against Cara Finn, they were calm. They're so calm on the ball. They have a lot of, you know, similarly kind of built players. A lot of them, they're not the biggest team, I'd say, but they're all really clever on the ball. The likes of Robbie Dolan, Robbie Nugent, Brian Derwin was brilliant early on, got 1-1. Hand that got man of the match in the game. They're all so clever on the ball and they rarely lose the ball. And even before that late penalty that they won, they were so calm. They were, Castlehaven were pressing them, but they were just well able to get out of these sticky situations. Brian Stack as well. And the best of them all is Ben O'Carroll. I think he's just an absolute joy to watch.
Yeah.
So good on the ball. And Glenn will be overwhelming favourites, but there's something about St. Bridges. They've a great belief about them, and it probably does come back to that tradition that you mentioned.
Yeah, you can't underestimate it for sure. I do think, like, if you're nitpicking and you had to find, if it even is one, a flaw or whatever in the Glenn setup, is that they maybe don't have that one really prolific score. You know, the one that gets like 8 or 9 points or whatever a game. They sort of share the scores, and it's obviously effective. Like, but Bridges can share the scores as well. But they seem to have 3 sort of prolific forwards. Ben O'Carroll is obviously the main man. He's very classy. But Robbie Nugent, you know, he was on fire.
Derwin, yeah.
And Derwin was the one that got the goal in the end. You know, like, I mean, when you've got that much firepower up front, you know, you're always going to be really dangerous.
Yeah, they've kind of, the bullets coming from all angles. And like Castlehaven, they obviously, like, weren't really, they're similarly, they have a lot of good forwards as well, but they weren't able to stop the Bridges boys. But it's the way they play that they're so clever. A lot of them, they're direct running with the ball, and they're just a very good team. And that semi-final was kind of discarded in the build-up, with all the talk obviously being about Kilmacud and Glenn. But I think, like, St. Bridges, you know, they proved, they were 1-7-6 up at half time. They were even more up at one stage. They were 5 or 6 points up at one stage in the first half. Like, Glenn will know that these boys are not to be sniffed at. Like, you know, they're a very good team. Paul McGrath, they could have had a goal actually as well after half time when Paul McGrath, and he didn't even get the point, he kicked it wide. In fairness to him, he'd made a brilliant interception.
But he got one later on that was really important as well.
He did. He got the last score before that penalty, like, so he made up for it there.
Yeah. And that's a mark of a brilliant player, isn't it? Like, you know, you made a mistake, but you rectify it later on. Like, it doesn't affect you.
He was the captain. He gave the speech after the Connacht final, so he's obviously a big leader in the team. But I suppose he's so similar to a lot of their players. They're so quick, so good in the ball, like, and they'll be hard beaten. Like, from the Castlehaven perspective, I suppose they'd been living on a bit of a knife edge. They kind of ran through a few of their lives. Like, they went extra time against Cratlow, penalties against Dingle. You know, they've been had tight games. They had a brilliant win, obviously, in that Munster final against Dingle, but I do think Bridges were deserving winners yesterday.
Oh no, they definitely were. I suppose you got to give credit to Castlehaven because they did have to throw the kitchen sink, and they did manage to find a way to get back into the game. They got 2 late points in the first half, and that was absolutely vital because they kind of would have been dead and buried at that stage. So they had something to build on in the second half. I want to talk a little about Brian Hurley purely because I just love watching him play. Like, I think he's class. He missed a few frees in 45s, but the points he did get were sensational. And then, you know, he's the ultimate, like, makes something out of nothing player. I tweeted that he reminds me a lot of, he's like, it's a cardinal sin to compare Gaelic players to soccer players, but he reminds me of Luis Suarez. I don't know, like, that sort of small frame that really, so twisty and dynamic.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Can just the definition of like a handful, you know, he must be a nightmare.
Yeah, he kind of has that desperation that Suarez had, that if he has the ball, like there's something is going to happen, and if not he's going to make it happen. And you can see it, he's such a key man, and anytime he gets the ball, like if he gets a half a chance, you expect him to just, he'll kind of shake someone off. He did it once in the first half where he got a pass and he ran forward and I thought, has he carried this too far? And then he takes a step outside and kicks it over. Mm. Michael Hurley's obviously similar. He wasn't like on the top form that he'd showed earlier in their campaign. Obviously, he'd pulled a hamstring against Dingle. Like, so he was not having him at the full of his health was a bit of a loss. For Castlehaven, he was still decent, to be fair to him, but
they still had their chances, though. Like Castlehaven, I mean, Roy Maguire hit the crossbar. If that had went in, just the way the momentum was going at that stage, you know, there wasn't a realm where it was impossible. For Castlehaven,
no. They showed great heart, and they obviously have all year to win those tight games. To beat Nemo, they were level in that game in the county final in injury time as well. Like, so Jack Ahlan actually hit the crossbar in the first half for them as well. So, you know, they hit the crossbar twice. Like, so that's unlucky. Like, and in the end, it did come down to that score from the St. Bridget's sub, John Cunningham.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what a brilliant score that was from about, he was only after coming onto the field. He was about 50, 60 metres out and just said he'd draw a boot at it, and a brilliant, brilliant score that kind of gave them a bit of a cushion when they needed it. Like,
yeah, no, definitely. And then what I did think was strange about Castlehaven was it at that stage then they were maybe a point down? Well, they needed a goal anyway, maybe three down, really late on in the game, and they have possession. And when you're sort of talking, well, they're going to launch this in here, they're going to launch it in the box and, you know, try and scrape a goal really late on, get an equaliser. But instead, they got the ball out wide, they worked it back into the middle, just to sort of half work it back wide and then back into the middle, which just makes no sense to me, because when you're playing Gaelic football, if you're going to do that, you're always taught to kick the ball in from an angle. So either, from some sort of width, because if you hit it straight on, it's always going to, like from a central position, it's always going to favour the fullbacks and the defenders who are just going to palm it in front of themselves. But they were so determined to play it through the middle where it's the most congested, and then the inevitable happened and they got overturned, ball broke down the other end, and I think it resulted in a penalty.
Do you remember that other time as well where they did the hand pass the ball over the sideline?
Yeah, oh, straight over his head. It was a real lack of composure or something, and that maybe came from coming out in the second half with that sort of desperateness that we need to get back into this game. But, and they did get back into the game, and, you know, and it worked to a certain degree, but when you do it so early in the match, you've nearly no composure left, you know, because it's so long to be playing frantic and chaotic football.
They were kind of dawdling on the ball as well at that stage, and that was the sign of the team that were beaten. Like, and Bridget's actually worked that. They worked that up the field lovely. I know the Castlehaven boys were, a lot of them were like away from home, like up the field. But Bridget's worked it lovely to win the penalty. Mm-hmm. And your man, he was going to round the goalie, only he was taken out from the back, coming in behind him. It was such a sweet penalty for Ben O'Carroll to be standing over. Like, no, like, it wasn't that they were 2 points up, they were 3 points up. He was asking the line, what should he do? And I was surprised that he didn't ask the ref, because straight after he put the penalty over the bar, he was kind of joking with the ref. He was like, you know, you could have told me that was the last kick.
Yeah.
Because I'd say he
loved
to bury that. Like,
yeah,
no, it would be such a sweet one to have scored a goal there.
Like. Absolutely, it would have showed real character to put it in the net. But there is always that fear. I guess imagine he misses, the keeper saves it,
and it's straight out to field. Like.
Yeah, and they like play on.
Like, would you trust the ref if he told you this is the last kick? Like,
exactly. Like. You'd be blaming him straight away. But then the ref could just turn to you and say, "You should have scored. Like, you had a penalty." You know, I can't remember the last time I seen anyone actually go for the option just to kick it over the bar. In the penalty, more often than not, they do just try to bury it. What would you do?
It was such a unique situation, though. You never see it like where they're 3 points up in the penalty and it should be the last kick. To be honest, I probably would kick it over, just take win. Like,
I'd be so nervous for going to kick it over and hitting it wide because it's obvious, it's like such an obviously easy shot, it's nearly too easy. But then I'm not Ben O'Carroll, like, he was never going to miss that. He was absolutely fantastic.
No, class act.
So it worked out really well. It was the perfect game. It kind of whetted the appetite for the Glen Kilmacud game, which was blockbuster because of all the stuff that happened the year before. But it will be St. Bridget's and it will be Glen in the final. What do you think of that match? Are you having Glen as the overwhelming favourites yourself, or do you think it'll be closer than maybe the bookies will have it?
No, I think it'll be very close now, yeah. I have to say. As I mentioned earlier, I've huge time for St. Bridget's and haven't been impressed with them against Carfin. Was even more impressed yesterday. And I like Glenn, they will treat them with the respect that they deserve, but I still think it'll be an extremely tight game. There probably is a sense of, you feel that there's a degree of faith that Glenn will eventually win this All Ireland. Like, they've been there for the last 3-4 years, you know, they've lost to Kilcoo, they've beaten Kilcoo, they've lost to Kilmacud, they've beaten Kilmacud. You kind of feel as if they're a team that deserves an All-Ireland, but like, Bridges they'll definitely push them, I would imagine, all the way anyway.
Yeah, no, I think it'll be a very close game as well, and that's actually a really good point about Glenn with their, and it's a sort of pattern of play, because in 2020, Slochneil put them out of the championship, 2021, they beat Slochneil, 2021, Kilcoo put them out of the championship, as you say, 2022 they beat Kilcoo, and then 2023 Crokes beat them, 2024
they beat Crokes, like,
you know, like, they're the ultimate, like, you know, you can't give them two swings at it because they'll always find a way. And we sort of half talked about it, how subdued they were at full time with the Kilmacud game. I thought there'd be an eruption of, like, we did it, we beat, you know, the best team in the country, like, that has to mean something. But they were very measured in how they're like, no, nothing's won yet, you know, there's no point celebrating, you know, we've got this far before, and it didn't feel very good when we lost the final. So they're going to be focused. That's a bad sign for St. Bridget's, I'd say St. Bridget's would have preferred it if, you know, they had went really mad and then maybe won the game quite comfortably, but because it was a hard semi-final it probably stands to them a little bit more.
Well, I think what subdued them is that they'll be so disappointed with how they let Kilmacud back into it straight away, having won the game. And you could see Conor Carvel, he's the captain, and after the game, he was like, he had his hands in his hips. He wasn't celebrating. He kind of nearly looked like a lad who had been beaten or had drawn the game. You know, so that would have, it's like a soccer team when they concede a late goal to lose their clean sheet, even though they've won the game. Do you know, they're disappointed, like.
That's two soccer references
in themselves,
we've mentioned.
Like, so, yeah.
We have to be careful now. A third one and we're out. Well, there was other club bits on as well. The All-Ireland Club Intermediate semi-finals and the junior semi-finals. Now I'm going to let you go to town on the junior situation, because I know you've got a lot to say on it, but a little bit on the intermediate first. Kilnamarta beat St. Kevin's, and then Allenwood beat Collihanna, Collihanna, the Armagh team, of course, the Ulster team won. But that was Johnny Doyle. He's 46 this month and he still kicked 2 points, you know, in an All-Ireland semi-final. And like, he's just, yeah, every time you see him play, you just support him, because whatever, you know, side he's obviously going to be on is the one you want, because he's just so likeable and so inspirational. And it begs belief, isn't it?
It is. It's unbelievable that he's still kind of, he's galloping up and down the field, whether it's wing forward or midfield. He's still as fit as he needs to be to kick 2 points from play out of 11 points that they scored. You know, it shows how involved he was. We've seen highlights from the last day, the point he scored in Parnell Park, running down the wing, and it was like he was 10 years younger, do you know. So He's unbelievable. It's obviously going to be Kilnamartra of Cork. They had a very tight game with St. Kevin's of Castlereagh in Roscommon. That was in Amour Park. And it was only they scored two goals within the space of a minute, so it was a bit of a killer for St. Kevin's, you know, to a double whammy like that. They did so well to get it back to a 1-point game late on. So yeah, so Kilnamartra, they're from the they're kind of a Gaeltacht village. They're in West Muskerry in Cork. John Evans, who has previously managed Roscommon, Tipperary and Wicklow, he's a Kerry man. He's their manager, and you know, he was saying that Kilnamartra will be empty tomorrow, and they'll have another day out now this weekend. It'll be empty again when they all go up to Croke Park. So that'll be a good final. It's the Cork teams. It's more often than not the Kerry teams that do so well in that intermediate. But I remember back to a few months ago, it was Milltown Castlemaine. The boys were beating Fossa. They had to play Kilnamartra the next week, like, so yeah. You know, that was obviously going to be a tough one for them, like, so yeah. Daniel O'Donin, he got a goal, and he's a player we've seen before. I remember he scored an unbelievable solo goal when he was in school. It was some school's game that I'd seen before, so he's one of their key players. So that'll be a final to look forward to. I don't know too much about Cullyhanna, but they have one or two on the Armagh team. I think there's a Ross McQuillan. Mm-hmm. I think he's from Cullyhanna. Obviously should have my research done here, but that'll be a final to look forward to.
Yeah. No, I always think of Cullyhanna. I was telling you this as well. I came out of a pub in Belfast, the Halffield, and woke up the next day and I was wearing a Cullyhanna quarter zip. I have no idea how or who it owns to. So if anyone's missing one from around 2014... say small, I have it. I still have it at home. Like, you never throw away a good top. But moving on to the junior games then, I know you've got a lot to say about that.
They also have Aidan Nugent, so he's obviously,
but you don't get much bigger than that. Yeah,
Aidan Nugent and Ross McQuillan in the forward line, so you know, that's a force to be reckoned with up front. So looking forward to that final next week, definitely.
Yeah, and then another Ulster team is in the junior final, Arva from Cavan, and they've got a very peculiar sort of situation, or an unusual, I don't know, it's just weird.
Yeah, well, they lost the Cavan junior final last year by a point. They've been kind of up and down, a bit of a yo-yo team in terms of the championship, but they've been going so well in the league. They lost they won a relegation final in the league last year.
A senior league club playing junior championship.
Yeah, so this is going to be it's going to be an unbelievably high standard for a junior final. And I know it was a high standard last year when the two Cliffords were obviously playing in it in the All-Ireland junior final. But it's going to be very high this year when Arva, a senior club in Cavan, they have Kieran Brady, who's obviously a key player for Cavan. But when they take on Listowel Emmets, who defeated Laherdan McHales of Mayo by 111 to 3 points, this game was over at half time. And there has been a bit of kind of, I suppose people are kind of awakening to the fact that since 2005, since 2005, Kerry have accounted for 14 participants in the All Ireland Junior Club Final. They've won 11 of them, which is a little bit down. Well, it's a good bit down to the fact that they only have 8 senior teams.
Yeah.
Now, they do have 16 intermediate teams, which means that Listowel technically are the 25th best team in Kerry this year, having won the junior. But it is a situation that I would certainly feel strongly about, that there should be a uniform approach, that counties have the same number of teams in their championships. Obviously, it's going to be hard to police that, in that some counties have a lesser amount of clubs than others. But certainly in a place like Kerry, which is like the best football county that there is, along with Dublin, like, the fact that they've only 8 senior clubs, that it's their 25th best club playing against Laherdan, who would be Mayo's 33rd best club. Like, that doesn't, it does kind of damage the integrity of the competition a small bit, I would say. Mm-hmm. And it's something similar. The pattern is also the same in the hurling, in that Kilkenny have been in 10 finals since 2005. 10 All-Ireland Junior finals since 2005, winning 7. They have the same, it's the same situation in Kilkenny, in that they have 12 senior clubs and 12 intermediate clubs. So it's their 25th best club playing junior, which is a similar thing, that it's a higher level of a club playing in this competition when they come out of Kilkenny and when they come out of Kerry, like, which to my mind isn't the fairest way to do it. Like, there should be a uniform approach. Kilkenny have played in 10 finals since 2005, winning 7. They've also been very dominant in the intermediate grade, given that it's only their 13th, their 13th strongest team. So, you know, it's, you just feel that there should be a uniform approach to it.
Yeah, it definitely feels a bit skewed for sure. They probably will get a good game though, considering that Arva are a senior team technically that they're playing. So it'll probably be a bit more evened out maybe than what they're getting. But it is strange. I read somewhere actually that for the first time ever, if all Ulster teams win, all Ulster teams are in the final, but if they all win, then it'll be the first time ever that they've won an All-Ireland, you know, at all three grades. So history could potentially be in the making there, but opposition like St Bridget's and Arva and the likes will have a lot to say about that.
Well, Kilkenny, forget about Ulster, even provinces, Kilkenny are going for the clean sweep in the hurling, which kind of, I suppose, backs up my point a bit more, in that Tulliher, Rossbrook, and that's Wally Walsh's club, they're in the junior final this weekend. Thomastown are in the senior, and O'Loughlin Gale are, Thomastown are in the intermediate, and O'Loughlin Gales are in the senior. So, in fairness, Kilkenny are going for the clean sweep as well. So, it could be Kilkenny and Ulster domination.
Yeah, definitely.
Which
is
something to fear.
There was also some.
Like that, like.
No, I don't like the sound of it, to be fair. But there was also some county matches on. The pre-season tournaments have been up and running, and we often sort of. You sort of go into these games, oh, they don't really mean anything. But then when your team loses, or a big team loses, you know, suddenly it means everything. And one of the big teams that lost was Mayo. A sort of shocking loss to London. Now, to give it some context, they give 7 debutants in that match. But sure, you know, FBD League, McKenna Cup, McGrath Cup, whatever, they're full of debutants. You know, I watched the Dublin game, and it was full of players I'd never heard of before. How many of them were debutants, I didn't know. But they still found a way to get over the line in a game that they were expected to win. And Kevin McStay was very cutthroat afterwards. He said, it's not easy to get scores at this level. The sort of defensive structures you're up against is pretty, pretty tough. But also, the opportunities do not go on forever. This was a big chance for them, talking about the debutants. We'll have to go back now during the week and see who really measured up and who didn't. And that's how ruthless this bloody game is, unfortunately.
Yeah, he's could be a tough week for some lads. Like, I suppose, while they're often criticised, these pre-season competitions, and I seen Niall Rigney, former Laois hurler, he was saying that what is the point of them? Let lads enjoy their Christmas.
Yeah.
But the county season is so compact, like, it's over by June, July now, that you have to, like, I was still excited watching, say, teams playing this, because you're excited about who is playing.
Yeah.
And, you know, these boys who are making their debuts, how do they get on? Will they make an impression so that they could be in, you know, a starting 15 for the championship?
Mm-hmm.
So they're still, like, and player, like, for players who are on the fringes of county pans, like, this is their, you know, this is their All-Ireland, basically, in that this is where they have to make an impression, or as Kevin McStay said, they're going to be cut, like. So they do have an importance, obviously, to players and to managers who want to pick their teams. And I suppose we've been so long without county, inter-county GA, that you're just excited to see it back. And I know I watched Tipperary and Waterford hurlers on Clubber yesterday, and, like, it's completely new look teams from both sides. But Waterford won that game now. Tip got a red card early on, and Waterford were the better team. But you're still excited about them, and there's still degree of interest there, even though we, like, nobody cares who wins them.
Yeah,
really.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like, it's not an honour, like, it's not a good season if you win the Waterford Crystal Cup, you know, or the Diora Light O'Byrne Cup, as it's now known. But, like, they still have a place in that
Yeah, I think so. And they're for the diehards like us, maybe, you know, we'll always find some sort of enjoyment in them. Like, I watched Tyrone v Donegal, and you sort of see the team sheet beforehand, and it's not filled with, you know, the huge names. Obviously, Dark Anavan and stuff was still playing. But, like, when you hear things, like I heard a lot about this corner forward, Conor Cush, and then he was starting corner forward. So I was like, oh, good, I finally get to see him. You know, there's that element to it where you finally get to, like, see what all the fuss is with some of these players, and that game itself was actually quite decent. Donegal,
you wouldn't really care what other counties are doing. Do you know what I mean? It's nearly the interest is all in your own county, like, and who's playing, because it's coming from the club scene and who's impressed for the club. They've got the call up.
Yeah.
Do you know, all the talk is in Tipperary has been like that, like who's in training and who's not. And
especially after the split season when there was no county for so long. So I'd say there was more eyeballs on the club game, and so you've really like examined it, you know, you've took it all in a little bit more than you maybe normally would have, so that now when the county's on, you're like,
he deserves a shot. How the hell is this lad in there?
That's exactly it. And then so Tyrone were playing Donegal in that match, and we're speaking of like people are interested in Donegal and Jim McGuinness. I had family members at the game. It was in Healy Park, and they were saying the crowd attendance was something like that of a league game, you would find less at some league games. Apparently Donegal are getting massive support at them. I couldn't find the numbers of the or for the attendance, but for a McKenna Cup game, one of the first McKenna Cup games, their second round, that's what the Jim McGuinness effect is like. You know, I mean, there's serious curiosity there, and there's the Donegal fans are just excited by this one name alone. They haven't even done anything yet. That's say something for a man who apparently has ruined the game.
Well, they have a fence built up around their training grounds, so, you know, there's nowhere else to see them, like, so this is the only place and the only chance that you have, like. You can understand why, like, he's such a kind of enigmatic figure, Jim McGuinness, and he kind of does his own thing, and, like, you just have a sense that he's doing something wild with the boys up in Donegal, like, from what you've heard. All that he did before when they won the All-Ireland the last time. So it definitely brings a bit of excitement anyway. And she's seen that last week there was already even headlines when Finbar Rorty, he was too young to play and McGuinness played him. So
it's just typical McGuinness.
He does his own thing.
He does his own thing, yeah. When it's like, I wanted to play him, so I played him.
Yeah, he's from his own club, Nave Cunnell, so he obviously knew what this lad is all about. But yeah, that's...
I thought it was interesting. I actually read a thing earlier, must have been last week, Jim McGuinness talking. He was like, he had Michael Murphy half tortured on the phone to come back. So like, it was not for a want of trying, you know, that Michael Murphy isn't back. And a lot of people thought that him being appointed would be enough nearly to persuade him, considering that he's only 34. He's only missed one season. You know, it wouldn't be crazy if he was to come back in, especially when you look at like Cluxton or whatever last year. So this is actually going to be Jim McGuinness's first season as Donegal manager, underage as well, where he doesn't have Michael Murphy, you know, even just about.
I respect Murphy for sticking to his guns. Yeah. I'm done. Leave it. I'm done. Yeah. Leave me alone. Like,
don't retire in the first place if you were going to be, you know, not.
If there's any chance that you will come back. I know it's obviously such a huge commitment. And like, we wouldn't know the half of the training that these boys are doing. But like, I like it when a lad sticks his guns. Yeah. Like, I'm done.
Yeah. Joe Canning did something similar too, wasn't it? When...
Yeah,
Henry Sheffield, your manager, they were all like, oh, he's coming back. And he kept saying, he's like, I'm not. And they're like, oh, but he might do, I heard. And he's like, I'm not. You know, like, well, how many times do I have to say it? No, there is a lot of respect to it. And then another talking point, and it's something that definitely could have been used in the Glen match, is the orange football. First of all, a little bit unusual looking, but are you a fan of it?
Well, that's Mayo's excuse that they lost to London because we're using orange ball. Like, they're not used to this. I seen an awful funny tweet from RF. He said, the hurlers lost to New York, the footballers lost to London, Mayo are back. But yeah, they're going to blame the orange ball, I suppose. It could definitely have been useful in that game.
But why not? Like, why wasn't it used in the game?
Yeah, I don't know.
It just doesn't make any sense to me. And then what I want to know is, what happened to yellow ball? Like, I remember when that was first brought in, like, and there was kind of a kick up about it because, you know, traditionalists watching Gaelic football, like, you know, it was always white, it needs to be white. And they brought in a yellow one. It was for the sort of Saturday night games that they started bringing in for the league, the yellow ball. I know it causes a bit of a problem in hurling, but that's more to do with the weight of it, isn't it?
No, like, people are okay with it now in hurling because it's been confirmed that it's the yellow ball, and that's the way it is. Like, and there's no real difference, I would imagine.
Well, Patrick Horgan,
though, I felt Patrick Horgan isn't happy with it. Yeah, he doesn't like. But to my mind, there's no real difference anyway. And like, it would have been, if there was an orange ball yesterday, it would have been funny to have seen it in Newry. Like, would you have? You know Hugh Kenny's goal there, you didn't see it. Like, would you have just seen a little orange rocket flying across the field? Like,
yeah, exactly. I think it would have made a bit of a difference. Maybe just like instinctively, you wouldn't go to jump something that's a different colour than what you're used to getting. But like, I don't know. I think we're clutching at straws here now. They definitely could have been doing with the orange ball, or probably shouldn't have played the game in the first place. Let's be honest. You know, we were clear on that. Hopefully the fog's a little bit better in the club all Ireland. We're really looking forward to it. St. Bridget's v. Glen is the big one. Lots of county games are coming thick and fast too. The league's starting the week after.
Yeah.
The All-Ireland, is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Lachlan Gales, Thomas is as big now. You said the big one. So
I heard about that.
Come on
now.
Come on now.
That's the 21st.
Settle down there.
We'll be. Well, you'll guess who's in the hot seat that day when we're recording that show. But just quickly on the league before we're coming up to it, do you think it's a tight turnaround following from these preseason competitions? Like, are they preseason competitions when the very next week you're into the league?
I think they are. Like, the way it is, like, that it's so tight that. And I seen Colm O'Rourke was giving out that, or he was saying that the Sigerson should be moved somewhere else. And
he's a lot of students.
Where can you go? Like,
yeah.
Like, this is the preseason. All them boys have been training, they've been playing in house matches. These preseason competitions will be over soon enough, and you'll have the league, which is like, it's going to fly around because. That's on 27th of January, like.
Yeah.
So, and some people say the hurling section, that is pre-season competition anyway, that nobody really cares about. So, yeah, I think it's brilliant that it's coming around quick because we've been waiting so long for it to come that it'll be great when it does. 27th of January, Kerry v Derry in Austin Stack Park. Sure, you'd be looking forward to it already.
Absolutely.
But the club games first, I can't wait for them. It's always my favourite day in the calendar, All-Ireland Club final day, and I'll be booking my seats for Croke Park. I can't wait for it now in 2 weeks' time. It's always great that it's a double header as well. That, you know,
get your money's worth.
You get your money's worth, and you go in
you
haven't
paid for a game for a long time.
Even if you only want to see the hurling, which most people probably do, like, you'll watch the football anyway, just because it's the All Ireland final. Like,
yeah, no, of course it does. It adds to it and helps fill Croke Park a little bit as well, because it can be a bit, especially in January, it's cold and a bit sort of cold. You know, it doesn't live up nearly to how important it is in terms of atmosphere.
Well, that probably added to it yesterday that they were in provincial grounds. Like, even Semple Stadium, there was a good crowd there.
Yeah.
Four or five or even six sections of the stands were full watching that one. So
I know, I really thought that added to it. It was definitely a smart move. That's all we have time for today. You can tell we're going to talk about lots of GAA that's coming up this month alone and for the rest of the year. We'll be here every single Monday. So remember to like, share, subscribe, and we'll catch you next week.
Sports Joe presents the GAA Hour.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.